With the angle about 45 metres, here he comes to win the All-Ireland Cup. Our mission was to show that we're no longer the whipping boys of Munster.
Welcome to the GAA Scorers Podcast. This is your host, Pierce Corcoran. On tonight's show, we'll be chatting to Emmett Ryan, or more famously known as Action 81, our resident Munster hurling expert, Mick O'Connor, Daniel St. Ledger, Cardiff footballer, to talk Cavanaghgate, and Paul Fitzpatrick will be joining us later on to talk Shawnee Johnston. First up, though, the most talked about topic is the tackle that has resonated around the nation. Last Saturday night, Sean Kavanagh committed a mortal sin, depending on who you believe, when he pulled down Monaghan forward Conor McManus when he was in on goal. We'll start with you, Dan. Thoughts from an inter-county player's perspective on what happened last Saturday night?
Well, I suppose as most inter-county players have said between Twitter and social media and whatnot, I think any player would have done the same thing in Sean Kavanagh's position. I saw an article today from Darren Hughes where he said he'd have done the same thing too. So I suppose you can't really condone the action. But at the end of the day, I don't think Kavanagh was left with very much option. I mean, it was a definite goal-scoring chance that McManus probably would have slipped it away. And as it could have been the difference between an All-Ireland semi-final for Tyrone or being knocked out, you know.
And is that an awful lot of people have talked about in interviews going on from the incident that Sean Kavanagh wouldn't have been able to look his teammates in the eye if he hadn't have made that tackle. Is that something that goes on in inter-county dressing rooms?
Yeah, well, like, I suppose you can put it in the other kind of way as well. Let's say if a forward missed a penalty or missed a one-on-one, it's not a case of not being able to look at each other in the eye, but you probably have a sense of disappointment in yourself, and it would be kind of, I don't know, it depends from your viewpoint, but from an inter-county point of view, let's say you're training for 6, 7, 8 months, you're training 5, 6 nights a week. I mean, you do whatever you have to win. Now, whether that's, as I said, take down an opponent, or whether it's kicking points, kicking goals, whatever it is, I think it all falls under the one category, really. It's you do what you have to do, and unfortunately it's become such a it's a ferocious sort of a stage to be on, and you just do whatever you have to do.
Emmett, want to take up that point from Dan, from an outsider's perspective, from someone who studies the tactical and analysis of the games in depthly, is this something you're seeing more and more in games, the cynical fouling? Is it becoming a bigger bearing on the results?
Well, like, to me, the issue isn't so much the foul that Sean Kavanagh made, but the way it's ruled, as the alarm bell goes off in my background here. The problem is, Sean Kavanagh, when he did that, knew that the sanction he'd most likely get would be a yellow card. There was not enough of a deterrent there really for him. Now, to be honest, I think even if it was a regular situation, the guys threw him goal, the game is that close. I know if I'm in Sean Kavanagh's shoes, I'm pulling him down too. But the thing is, you look at the situation there, if it's a red card, Sean Kavanagh, hugely important to in that game. I don't think anyone is denying that. There's an ambulance going by. If Sean Kavanagh's red carded at that point, it changes the complexion of the game. The issue there is not what Sean Kavanagh did, it's how it's legislated for. Now, I know the black card rules are bringing in next year. A two-armed pull down anywhere in the field is a black card. So it wouldn't have mattered that he was last man. He could have been anywhere in the field. If he's using two arms, pulling him down, that's a black card. Now, I'm not a huge fan of the black card rules, but that is one of the fouls they are trying to stamp out. So that's the way they're going to deal with it. So I don't think most people would have been up in arms to the same degree if Sean Kavanagh had not sat on the pitch. The issue was the referee only really had the power there to give him a yellow card, which, of course, isn't that much of a sanction. It turned 3 points into one. And that was the real issue most people had.
Yeah, so at the stage of the game, it was, you know, if McManus had been allowed in and kicked the goal, you know, Monaghan would have been a massive momentum change, and Monaghan would have gone a point up. Instead, they got the free in and went the point down. And as you alluded to earlier, Daniel, it's, you know, it's win at all costs. Like, if you come off the pitch and you've played Sickers and Cup, you've played in the county, like Andy Rainbow or Dave Billings are going to give you a pat on the back for a fair play. You've got to do what you got to do to win. And I think he's fully within his rights to do what he did.
So is this something then, is Joe Boddy right then about the culture of the game, about where it's going? Is there something wrong with people's perceptions of what Sean Kavanagh did, and that morally it was wrong, but us as a GAA loving nation, we seem to have accepted it rather easily. Is that something that is wrong, is morally wrong with the sport? Or is it a simple case of horses for courses?
My view on it is not so much that like it's a major moral issue. To me, it's a case of, it is something we've been looking at. It's a type of foul which wasn't common in the game. So we're evolving the rules to catch up with that. Now, like, they're never going to be in sync. Next year, there'll be something else complaining about it being awful that's going to get called out. We're going to have to analyze that. That's just the way games evolve. Any sport has that issue. So, like, to me, like, I think the reaction, and it was really dictated by Joe Browning's rant, I think a lot of what Joe said was accurate. I think the emotion he threw into it is all really colored it, to be honest. And, like, you know, the whole Sean Cavan looking as a man. No, that's BS. Like, I'm sorry. Sean Cavan did what he had to do to win. That is the objective he has every year. He's put 8 months of his life into it. You might go, also, Monaghan is kind of going, if you're telling me a Monaghan player sees Sean Cavan throwing his goal in the same situation and pulling him down, I'm wondering what the Monaghan player is doing on the pitch. Because the rules of the state now means it's no deterrent to not do that. And your objective is to win. That's the bottom line. So Sean Cavan didn't have a deterrent. He went out, did what he had to do. And even the look in his face of, well, what else could I do? Like, you know, it's kind of, yeah. Because, like, you know, at least if there was some deterrent, he might have tried to foul him a different way, a less successful way, to be blunt about it. Like, cause the only way he was guaranteed, or even most likely, sorry, to stop McManus there was a two-arm tackle. So legislating for a two-arm tackle is the issue, not that Sean Cavan did it.
Thoughts, Mick?
Yeah, it's hard to disagree, I think. But a lot of the points Joe Brody made were very accurate. But, I mean, to call Sean Cavan's integrity as a man into question is, I think, was completely off the ball. I mean, Daniel, on the game itself, Dan, like, for me, I think it was one man and probably let slip past him. Like, what way did you see it pan out?
Yeah, well, I suppose it's hard to say, really, but I even thought if McManus had got that goal, I thought Tyrone were probably the better team overall. Now, it's very hard to say that, I suppose. No, but, you know, I thought Tyrone were that bit cuter, that they used possession that little bit more better.
It's a climate shot, Daniel.
Pardon?
Monaghan had 21 shots in that game. Came thrown at 30. Like, if you're putting up 21 shots in an all-in quarterfinal, you're not exactly doing enough to be likely to win the game. Like, I know Don Fowle, the blogger of the North, has worked out the average for a team in 70 minutes championship is 27 shots. When you're shooting that little, like six below the average, you're less likely to win than the team who's actually putting up 30 shots.
Yeah, exactly. And as I say, it's a numbers game. I mean, Tyrone were clearly on top in that regard. 30 shots, like, I mean, that says it all, really. But as it's coming back to the point about the red card, or about the, like, the crime not suiting the punishment and that, I mean, I think that's really the main issue. And as you alluded to, I mean, Brawley looking at Sean Cavan as a person and that, I mean, I don't see why that's relevant. And I'm not sure if there's something maybe underlying going on there, because it seemed like an extremely personal attack. And it was like, there was a lot of similar fouls around the field, maybe not as blatant as Sean's, but I thought there was a good bit of cynical fouling, but it wasn't necessarily goal scoring opportunities. But what's the difference, really, I suppose, you know?
And you touched on a good point there, Daniel, about the personal attack by Joe Brawley, as you've perceived it to be there. Is that something that inter-county players are becoming more and more wary of when they talk to the media? I know Donald O'Cusack did an article there a couple of weeks back about the media's relationship with its current inter-county players. After last Saturday night, is it something, from your perspective, would it be something that you would be reluctant to talk to the media afterwards? Or would you be reluctant to kind of interact with members of the media after that?
Yeah, well, I'd definitely be very careful. Like, I mean, I know Sean Cavan is not on Twitter, for example, but if he was and he said something to rub Joe Brawley up the wrong way, well, maybe that might be something that, you know, you'd think twice about talking to any kind of, whether it's papers, whether it's analysts, journalists, you have to just be a bit careful. And I'd probably be a bit wary if I was in that position. I'd just be a bit careful of what I was saying, you know, in the future.
And then from, on the flip side for you personally, Daniel, now when you see the tactics out like they are, the cynical fouling as people are receiving it from Tyrone, it's a more tactical game it's becoming, is that creating a bigger gulf between the counties who are contending for the All-Ireland Championship in September and perhaps the other counties who are trying to make the breakthrough, for instance, like Carlow?
Yeah, well, I think that, let's say, the sports science element is definitely creating a huge gap. I mean, there's less and less chance for the underdog to beat one of the big four. Like, I mean, if we came up against, let's say, the Dublins, the Mayos of this world, I mean, no matter how well you played or how much you were fired up and how much of an off day Dublin had, you're still highly unlikely, you know, due to strength and conditioning, just like maybe coaching from an underage, and I suppose even financially from a county board's point of view. I mean, I think the gap is it's alarming really at this stage, you know.
Is that something you've noticed, Emmett, in terms of the tactical side, is that some teams, perhaps the weaker counties, are struggling to keep up with the stronger counties in terms of the sports science element when you break down statistics?
You are seeing it, but at the same time, like, I know that the vast majority of teams are working with some form of an analyst now, like, because there is a growing analytics community, you know, both professionally and on amateur level, and you're seeing it more with, like, even club teams bringing in analysis to the side of things. But with the fouling thing, I think, like, to single out, like, a county which happens to be winning for is sort of missing the point of it, like, because everybody fouls, to paraphrase Dr. House. The counties that are winning are the ones who know when to and where to. And, like, that, you know, you might go, well, should fouling be part of training? Well, it's kind of going, well, yeah, probably should be, because you have to know when to do it. Like, when I was an under 13, I had coaches shouting, hit him at me, knowing that it was better to hit the guy when he was 40 yards out than when he was 20 yards out. So, like, it happens from the early age. Just, you see, well, cuter was a term we'd use over here, but it's just smarter. Like, you know, but, you know, it's a bad idea to give away a long-range free to Dublin because Stephen Cluxton is going to kill you. A free in the wing, maybe not as quite as dangerous. These are, like, things you notice in playing other teams. So if you know where to foul, you're a smarter team, and you're more likely to be a smarter team if you've got more resources naturally. But that's not just capital. That's human resources. Like, kind of like Tyrone, reasonable articulation. Dublin, of course, huge. Like, Cork, I suppose, are the biggest disappointment in that respect because they haven't really come on despite having the huge size and, frankly, being more immune to the emigration factor than, say, like their neighbours Kerry will be, who are getting gutted by it. Like, we're seeing, obviously, the smaller counties, they've less room for error when it comes to losing players. If they lose one or two players to emigration, that's a huge loss. If Dublin do, Cork do, they probably have enough behind them to reload. So not to go off on an economic tangent, but that's a huge factor in the current environment as well.
And just when you touched on the point there about Cork, just Cork's loss to Dublin last Saturday night really put the nail in the coffin for this current Cork team and for the era for Conor Coonahan. Emma, to put it to you, thoughts on Conor Coonahan's reign as Cork manager? Was it a success or was it a failure?
Unquestioned success to me. I know I'm like Conor Coonahan's last defender, but even I was thinking he had to go after this season because, like, this year he got it wrong. But if you look at what he did, he scouted Cork better than any manager since Billy Morgan's era in the early 90s. The first Cork manager to win an All-Ireland in the last 20 years. I think this is not only the first year he didn't win a trophy, it was actually the first year he didn't win two trophies in a single season. He's pretty good at winning stuff. He was pretty good at winning stuff. And also, he recognised what he needed to do. Like, you might go, well, the high ball game's predictable. Well, it wasn't just the high ball game. The high ball game opened up Cork's running game from deep. So he's very clever in that respect. And even their loss to Donegal last year, he realised their common system, those two elements wouldn't be enough. You'd have to find a way to break them down. And for the opening 20 minutes, they looked like they might actually have it, but Donegal eventually solved Cork's movement along the 45. So people talk about Conor Coonan as being very simplistic in his tactics. I think actually he was really quite strategically great, and if you look at his success rate in terms of wins, it was not exactly, you know, something to shirk at. Like, you know, Cork people complain about he only won the one All-Ireland. That's kind of going, guys, you didn't win one since 1990. That's one more than you had then. Like, Larry Tompkins didn't win one. Billy Morgan didn't win one after 1990. I take that myself.
Daniel, from the game on Saturday night, where do you think it went wrong yourself for Cork?
To be honest, I just don't think they could live with Dublin's power and their pace. They definitely exposed holes with the long ball, but how much came of that, really, you know, it was enough to keep them in the game, but it wasn't really ever going to threaten for them to win it, you know. Just coming back to Conor Coonan, we've had some dealings with them. We played Cork, probably second teams at times with Carlow over the years, and on each occasion Conor spoke to us, and I found him to be an absolute gentleman, and he spoke with, I suppose, rather than talking down to a smaller county, he's really kind of, he was very intrusive with us, and he stayed for maybe 3/4 of an hour, just talking about different elements of county football and different things, and what's the difference between Cork and Carlow and kind of stuff like that. And I found him to be just a terrific gentleman, really, now, just to point that out.
Mick, would you agree with Daniel's prognosis of the Cork situation and of Conor Coonan?
Yeah, I definitely agree with the two lads, and you know, I'm a big Coonan fan. I mean, people probably overlooked the fact that he won four leagues in a row to get them from Division 2 in the following year to win Division 1 and to win it 3 years in a row. It's no mean feat, you know. I think probably maybe should have walked after they won the All-Ireland and gone out on top. They could have won another one maybe. But look, I think definitely the time to go, and he can hold his head high, and he's done a great job at this Cork team, and just time for someone else to come in and freshen it up now.
So, with three Conor Cunningham fans, I'll put the point to you that's often made about that Cork team, that he only really won in All-Ireland against a really average Down team. Therefore, does that not taint his legacy?
And he beat what was in front of him.
Sorry?
He beat what was in front of him. Yeah, they lost in Munster to Kerry, but that same Kerry team lost to that average Down team. Cork beat what was in front of them on the way to Croke Park. They beat Dublin in the semi-final. They did what they had to do to win in All-Ireland. They might have only narrowly been a Down team, which was seen as average. Remember, they had one or two fantastic players like Clark in the side. So, like, you know, average is kind of a bit misleading because that was a bit of a one-off Down team in the era, like, because a lot of those players are only around for a year or two. So, yeah, that Down team was unlikely to make an All-Ireland final, but you're going to see that in the quarterfinals era, the odd team making a very deep run you wouldn't expect. And frankly, like, you know, asking Cork to beat anyone else other than who's in front of them is just, you know, foolish in my book. Like, they came very close to beating a Donegal team, which has looked as dominant as any winning an All-Ireland last year. And they beat Kerry off the park in that Munster final last year as well, but people were saying that maybe Cork already have a strong team in them. They absolutely bullied them. So, like, to say, like, yeah, All-Ireland has tainted, frankly, like, you know, I'll take an All-Ireland win. I don't care who I beat to get it.
That's a very fair point, Janet. Daniel, we'll put it to you. When pundits and when people will play down the significance of a win, how does that affect a county player's psyche when, for instance, winning an All-Ireland title, but yet the pundits won't give them much credit because they haven't really beaten anyone of note?
I don't think that's something that a county player would really look at. I mean, I know if I was winning an All-Ireland, I wouldn't care if we bet, you know, London, New York, whoever it was in the final, you know, it didn't matter. I mean, you have that medal and the rest of the record books will show, you know. I know from my own point of view, like, I've been playing with Carlo now for 6 years and I've had one championship win, and that one win has probably meant more to me than a lot of things for a lot of lads with All-Ireland medals, you know. But I suppose it's all relative really to the player. I mean, success is what you deem it to be, and I suppose if it doesn't really matter who you beat or what's in front of you, you know, you just get your medal, and at the end of the day, that's what it's all about.
Okay. Moving on now to Sunday, and Kerry and Cavan, probably the least glamorous, least talked about tie of the weekend. Emmett, you did an article up about the Polo Grounds rematch. You didn't seem overly enamoured with the result for Kerry.
Not really. Like, people say we didn't learn much about Kerry. I think we learned two things. One, that Eamon Fitzmaurice is a very smart guy, but he hasn't got a great team. That's the second thing. Well, essentially, he hasn't got a bench. Yeah, obviously, you know, he's got the stars still there. Don't get me wrong. You've got Colin Cooper, who was basically kept out of the game for the second half until he got his late score to wrap things up. And you're kind of going, it was like Cooper was a support around him. But when you look at the subs Kerry are bringing up, and also just how gassed they look in the second half. Cavan didn't do an awful lot to change their game in the second half. They brought in a couple of smart subs, Brady, McDermott. They played a little faster, but, like, you're not talking Dublin lightning pace stuff. They only set it up a little bit, and all of a sudden Kerry were on the back foot. Having gone in 11-2 at the break, and don't get me wrong, they were very smart in that first half. They kept it casual in their own half, made sure there was no space for Cavan, accelerated into Cavan territory, won a lot of frees, and they won 7 frees in the first half, from which they got 7 scores. So they were very, very intelligent. That's the one thing we know from Fitzmaurice. We saw it in the Munster final. He pitched an absolute gem from the sideline. But we have also seen that even that Munster final, I guess it wasn't a great Cork team. Sorry, guys, the peril of doing this outside. That Cork team nearly caught them in the end, because essentially Kerry didn't have the bodies just to keep the game going for the final 20 minutes. Against Cavan, they looked gassed with half an hour to go, and it was essentially a couple of smart scores and some pretty awful shooting by Cavan that won the day for Kerry. Like, when Cavan only have 8 shots in the first half, you know, it's going to help Kerry an awful lot. Like, obviously part of that was down to Kerry's defending. But really, you look at the 4 quarterfinals, and 2 teams stood out as being so far ahead of the other 2 that are through. Unfortunately, from an entertainment side of its perspective, they're on opposite sides of the draw.
Daniel, from your perspective, from an outsider, from looking in, on Sunday, did we see the prospective All-Ireland champions in Mayo? And on Saturday night, did we see another prospective All-Ireland champions in Dublin? Or would you see Kerry and Tyrone having a little bit more say in this championship race this year?
Well, I think the Kerry or Dublin and Mayo would be an All Ireland final. I think everyone really wants to see. I mean, even just thinking about the matchups now, it'll be an absolutely outstanding final, I think. But the one thing I would have, I thought Kerry, you were very hard to look into Kerry this weekend. I think they always have one massive performance, and I know it came against Tyrone last year in the qualifiers, but I still think they have the capacity to put in one big game. But I would be inclined to say you'd be looking at a Mayo-Dublin final, and it's something that it'd be extremely intriguing, I think.
Mick, Mayo, you said on Sunday that they're looking very, very good. Are they the All-Ireland champions in waiting?
Yeah, they certainly got they're probably the favourites now at this stage. They looked very, very impressive. And the difference thing with Mayo this year is they have a seriously strong bench as well. I'd agree with Daniel. I think there's a massive performance in this Kerry side. You know, if a big player to get back now is Anthony Marr in the middle of the park. If they get him back, and if James Donoghue is fit, he gives him another option, gives him, you know, one strong forward off the bench, like Darren Sullivan or James Donoghue, whichever drops out and comes in. You'd imagine it will be a Mayo Dublin final at the end of the day.
And of course, all this talk about Mayo, we have to talk about their win, their massive, massive win on Sunday, beating Donegal, 4-17 to 1-10. Mick, I'll start with you. What did you make of that result?
Yeah, certainly didn't see that coming. I actually backed Donegal myself, foolishly. So Mayo just looked awesome. And I suppose the work of Donny Buckley there this year as a trainer can't be overlooked. You know, he's big and he's defined the tackle and working on that. And Mayo's rate of turnover was frightening. You just look at Aidan O'Shea epitomised that, I think. You know, Mark McHugh wasn't fit. He had a hand in giving away the ball for the first two goals. And for Mayo's first goal, you know, the ball was under the canal end this time last year in the All-Ireland final. Killian O'Connor got fouled the ball from the free out. The ball ended up in the Mayo net. This time around, it turned over Neil McGee. McLaughlin played smart football, gave it to the finisher, Killian O'Connor, and he put the ball in the back of the net. And, you know, what a difference 10 months can make. And you look at 12 months ago, Andy Moran was there and he did his cruciate. This year he's back, giving Donegal a hammering. It was, you know, great win for Mayo.
Emmett, what's been the biggest difference for Mayo this year, bringing them from also-rans to what seems to be All-Ireland champions elect?
Well, I think they've just been more consistent this year than last year. Like, they are certainly, like, a year older, because remember, a lot of those guys are quite young. Like, Aidan O'Shea is the big standout there. He's only 24. And obviously, Killian O'Connor as well, quite a young guy. So, you got that going on as well. But, like, the full forward line they put out on Sunday is what really excites me, because those guys weren't playing at their best, and they still put 3-7 on the board and looked dominant. But, like, this is the first time that you've had Moran, Freeman, O'Connor as a trio together because of injuries to O'Connor and Moran during the year. So I'm thinking, like, you know, those three guys against Tyrone, they'll have another month's prep together, having had that 70 minutes. They have another gear in them yet that we haven't seen, and, like, they were pretty darn good on Sunday. So that's what I'm really excited about with this Mayo side. Definitely they are more organized. They aren't, like, they didn't make many mistakes last year, but they're making even fewer this year. And also, I think Horan's starting to get to grips with knowing the roles of his bench players. Like, he was trying to give Richie Feeney a run as a starter, but we've seen, like, Feeney is a very good impact sub. He seems to be despised a lot of people because he never gets it done as a starter. He's sort of the Kevin McManaman of the Mayo setup, even though obviously very different type of player, in that Feeney's far more effective coming in for a burst of 20 minutes than he is for starting from the off. So, like, little things like that, which may not be obvious, but they're really standing out, and just they're getting smarter in their shot selection and just in making space in the field. So again, this is just getting used to it. They're 3 years under Horan now. We saw a huge development really in their first year, where they had looked pretty weak in 2010. They sort of came forward in 2011 as sort of a much stronger side. Last year, obviously, another huge step forward, knocking Dublin out along the way. And then, of course, this year, really, everybody was saying, oh, they've had a too soft in Connacht. No one really had a hard run in the provincials, you know, with the possible decision of Monaghan, who didn't last that long. Like, no one had that many high-caliber, tough tests before getting to Croke Park last weekend. So it's not like Mayo were that much less tested than everybody else going into the All-Ireland series. And we certainly saw that in the way they beat Donegal. They looked as fresh, they looked as hungry, and they looked also as on pace Donegal from the start. They looked able to, they didn't look like they had lost a step in playing lower caliber teams. They looked like they knew what they were going to do, and they knew how they were going to do it. And that's really good organization there from James Horan.
Daniel, from your perspective, what sets this Mayo team seemingly apart from most other teams, having the ability to dismantle every team they've come up against so far with such ease?
Well, I suppose the hunger is probably one of the major factors, I think. They're actually, I think they're quite reminiscent of Donegal last year. I mean, they have the desire and the tackle, they have to get turnovers. They're up and down the field. They're really, 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 really hungry. And I think, in saying that, I also thought Donegal looked an extremely tired team on Sunday. I thought they looked flat, and I suppose they were playing like they had been for the previous few games. Like, they were handling errors, just sloppy little bits of that they didn't do last year, you know, and that obviously helped Mayo quite a bit. But as the lads alluded to, like, the Mayo full forward line, I think this year looks a lot, lot sharper than it did last year. It looks like there are serious scores in it. Also, the Barry Moore in the comeback midfield as well. And as I said, the James Horan is starting to realise how to use his bench properly now, and he's getting the timings right. And they just look like they have a ferocious, ferocious appetite for an All Ireland this year.
So now we have the four semi finalists: Tyrone, Mayo, Dublin, Kerry. Two seemingly classic setup. Where do you see? I know we've talked about prospective All Ireland finals, but realistically, where do you see those two semi-finals going? I'll start with you, Mick. Tyrone, Mayo. Oisin McConville today said that he could see Mayo doing the same to Tyrone what they did to Donegal. Do you agree? Is it Mayo just seemingly unstoppable getting themselves to an All-Ireland final? Or can Tyrone just do their best thing in the tail?
It's not beyond the realms of possibility that they'll give Tyrone a hammering, but I think Tyrone's there. They're cued at the back. They're, you know, we talked about earlier, they are cynical. They know to stop a goal chance, and it's not just Sean Cavanagh. They are cued among that backline. Conor Gormley is that. Mayo's just power. They shop Sean Cavanagh, and I'd imagine they'll do it better than any other team left in the competition. They've the armoury to do so. If they shop Sean Cavanagh, I'd imagine Mayo will definitely progress to the final.
Emmett, Tyrone, Mayo, call it.
Mayo are going to be too smart at the back to give up the freeze. Tyrone have relied on getting this far. They're going to be too fast up front for Tyrone's defence to cope with them. And they clearly can match Tyrone for strength in midfield. If it isn't double digits, I'll be very surprised.
Daniel, do you agree with Emerson, Rushy, McConville? Is this going to be double digits, or do you see an upset in the horizon?
I couldn't imagine there'd be any more than 10 points in it, to be honest. Tyrone, as the lad said, they are cute, but I don't think it'll be enough to stop this Mayo team. They just look absolutely ravenous, and I'd say maybe 5, 6, 7 points, something like that, to Mayo to pull away.
Dublin, Kerry, back to you, Daniel. Go, where do you see this game being won and lost?
Well, as I said, I think Kerry have a sting in their tail yet. With this Dublin team, I don't think they've clicked into full throttle yet. When they do start taking all their chances, they're going to be a team to be feared. But I think with the way Dublin are playing this year, they are leaving gaps. And I think that if there's any team to expose gaps in the defence, I think it could be Kerry. I would put my money on Kerry, to be honest, just to pip it. I think this could be Kerry's one big performance. And if there's any team that they'll raise their game for, I think it could be Dublin.
Emmett, you go along the same lines of thinking. Could this be the big performance in Kerry?
Nope, they already had it in Killarney. I think Dublin are going to put up about 10 to 15 more shots in Kerry in this game. They're only going to win by about 6 or 7 shots, because they just aren't scoring at the rate they really should be. So Dublin are going to dominate possession. They're going to clearly control the pace of the game. I could see Kerry going in within 2 points of the break, but once Dublin get 2 scores ahead, the game is going to be a formality.
Mick?
Just have a slight feeling there could be a sting in this tail. I agree with Dan on this one. I'd imagine they're going to play Donny in front, and with breaking ball, you've three flyers there in Darren O'Sullivan, James Donoghue, and Declan O'Sullivan as well. They're three class forwards. They could really hurt this Dublin defence if they go, you know, 6-on-6 at the back. Gooch could take Gerben to the cleaners if he's allowed Mark Gooch, and I just have a feeling Kerry could sneak it.
So there we go. Daniel and Mick going for a Kerry Mayo All Ireland final. Well, Emma thinks that it's going to be. Wouldn't be wrong in saying you think it could be two hammerings.
I think one will be much clearer. I think Mayo's hollering up Tyrone will be much clearer, but Dublin will still look dominant beating Kerry.
Dan, that's it for tonight, for folks. Thanks very much to Daniel St. Ledger and Emmett Ryan for joining us, and as always, Mick O'Connor. You can catch us always on gascores.com and gascores on iTunes. and on at GAA Scores. On Twitter, you can catch Emma Ryan at Action 81. And also Daniel St. Ledger, if you want to Dan St. L number 9, is it Daniel?
89.
Nearly there. That's nearly correct.
Yeah.
Thanks very much for joining us, lads.
No problem. Cheers.
Okay, we'll be back right after this message.
Elevate Sports Solutions is an innovative sports company that can provide you with the very best coaching resources and equipment. Check them out at elevatesports.co.uk or like them on Facebook.
That was very enjoyable to hear a new breed of intercounty star in Daniel St. Ledger, and even with the funkiest name in GAA, he still provided some excellent points. The new kids on the block in GAA circles, however, are Calvin. They lost out last weekend, but I caught up with AngloSouth editor Paul Fitzpatrick to ask him, firstly, did Calvin just start badly against Kerry?
They had, yeah. I suppose that what was most disappointing about it was they didn't really ever really go for the match. You know, coming off the field, I'd say they would have had more regrets than anything else, because they didn't really go bald-headed at Kerry and try and win the match. They never really created any goal chances. And I think they just gave them too much respect. And in the second half, they threw on some subs and sort of threw caution to the wind. And at that stage, they probably realised, you know, we can go toe-to-toe with these fellas. But by that stage, they'd left themselves too much to do, unfortunately.
And you say there that you don't think that they went at it. Where do you think it went wrong in the first half for them?
I just think Calvin were nervous, and I just think they gave them too much respect. Calvin played well below par, to be honest. Like, I don't think Kerry played very well, but Calvin did play below par compared to what they played, let's say, against the likes of Derry, or even in the second game against Fermanagh. Like, they played some great stuff, and they didn't get much credit for that win, or they got very little credit for the win over Armagh or London as well. But they just didn't play the form. You know, their shooting was off, their handling was sloppy. They just showed all the hallmarks of a team that was sort of nervous and just weren't sure of themselves.
And this Calvin team has come out of the blue a little bit this year for many people outside the county. And following on from comments Keen Mackey and Rory Dunn made about their worth not being undone this year, that they have to build on it for next year. Where is this good team, these good players, come from over the last year?
Well, Calvin have traditionally had good players for the last 10 years or so, coming through from underage. But it was a combination of factors. A lot of fellas were rushed through, and by the time they were 21 or 22, they had played 3 or 4 years of senior football with huge expectation hanging over them, and they had a great future behind them, to use that cliche. So that was one factor that they had to get that right, and they stopped rushing fellas in at 19 years of age into the championship team. The other thing was they decided to keep the under 21s and the seniors separate from each other. So for example, when Terry Hyland was under 21 manager, he had first call on all his players, even though there were 3 or 4 of them that were probably, you know, around the senior team, and that was a decision they made. So the under 21 setup in Calvin is almost a mini senior setup. It's every bit as good as the senior setup. So it hasn't come around by accident. Plus, there's they're bearing the fruits of good work at development squad level and stuff like that. And plus, there's probably a bit of luck involved as well. That it's cyclical, and they're getting some good players along in a bunch, which you need that as well. But it hasn't happened by fluke.
So the loss last weekend in the quarter final, would that go against the plan, or would it be a case of it's keeping to the schedule of progression and development?
That's a good question. Alan Clark, the Calvin captain, said after the match that we have a goal, and our goal wasn't to lose in an All-Ireland quarter final at Croke Park, which is very encouraging for Calvin supporters. But looking from the outside of the panel, I would say that they're ahead of schedule in their development. I think they really wanted to get to an Ulster final this year, because it's hard to get to an Ulster final, and you need the draw to fall into place, and the draw did fall into place for them this year. Like, we beat Monaghan fairly comfortably in the league, and they were the main stumbling block between us and the Ulster final from the outset. And Calvin would have fancied their chance of beating Fermanagh, and they were a good outside bet to beat Armagh as well, because Armagh weren't all they're cracked up to be, I don't think. So I think they would have been disappointed not to reach an Ulster final, but so that was probably their goal. And when they didn't reach an Ulster final, they said, "Well, we'd say to an All Ireland semi final." So they might have, in their own expectation, they might have come up short, but in the expectation of the rest of the county, I think they're well ahead of schedule. Like, it's only 2 years since they won that first Ulster Under 21 title. That was April 2011. So we're only less than 2.5 years on from that. So we're only really getting the tip of the iceberg of these players that are to come on. And this year's Under 21 team was the best of the three. I'd say the first team in 2011 was the second best. And in 2012, they sort of rode their momentum and they got a good win. But this year's team now in 2013 was a really good team. Like, that was a team that could have gone on and won in All Ireland. They had a bit of luck against Cork. They're only beaten by a point. So it'll be 2 or 3 years before we see those lads. But when we see those lads, I think that's when we're going to see the best of Cork.
Now, from someone obviously like yourself who has been following Cavan football for very intensely and with high scrutiny for the last few years, just in terms of who should we be looking out for in the next year or two to add to the likes of Keane Mackey and Martin Dunne and Rory Dunne at the back?
Well, of the fellas that have sort of made an impression on the senior team this year, you've Darren McVitie and Michael Argue. McVitie is about 12 stone. He's a very light player, but he's light and quick, very, very gutsy and very good use of possession. And he came to prominence in the under 21s and he came from nowhere. They only brought him into the senior panel at before the Derry match, and he actually came on and turned the game that day. And he actually won a starting place against Kerry, which was a good achievement in itself, and played well. And I was looking at the replay, he was one of the highest possessions on the Cavan team. Michael Argue is 6'6" midfielder from Ballybor. He's quite light, but he's going to fill out into a huge man, I think. He's a good ball player as well, very good fielder. Then of the other players that have still to come on, there's a fellow called Jerry Smith who played on the successful minor team 2 years ago, and then the other 21 team this year. He's an outstanding prospect. He's a wing half back or wing half forward, just a really slick ball player, likes to move the ball very, very fast. Endo O'Reilly is another who I thought would have probably got caught up to the senior panel this year. He was one of the top scorers, left footed, full forward or corner forward. There's lots, you know, there's lots. There's another fella called Conor Mina who he missed most of the under 21 campaign this year, but he's an outstanding centre half back.
So there just seems to be a huge amount of underage players coming through at Cavan, which seems to be very promising. But just to roll back the few years now, and where it's looking likely, according to social media, according to different media outlets, that Shawnee Johnson could be on his way back to Cavan Gaels, and as at the time of recording tonight, he's made himself unavailable for St. Kevin's. What's the feeling in Cavan at this moment in time about his possible return?
Well, we flagged that up in our paper in the Angus South there about 3 months ago now. That was the word on the ground in Cavan a while back. It took a while to sort of seep out to the national media. But the feeling always was that Sean Johnston wanted to play inter-county football for Kildare. He was sort of a man on a mission. He wanted to prove people wrong in Cavan. He was the hell had no score. Fury like a footballer scoring sort of thing. He really wanted to. He didn't care what stood in his way. He wanted to prove his point. And you had to admire him for that, in that whether you agreed with his motives or not, which I personally didn't. But you have to admire that he was dogged and he stuck to it and he did cop a lot of flack for it. But the thing I didn't like about it was there was a bit of blackguard, I suppose you'd say, around the time. Like, I spoke to this St. Kevin's chairman last year and I put it to him pretty strongly, like, and he said Shawnee's committed to St. Kevin's, which in hindsight is laughable, and it was laughable at the time, but everyone knew that he of course he wasn't committed to St. Kevin's, to the club he'd never been involved with in his life and had no connection to. So, you know, anyone who's shocked or dismayed by any news that Shawnee Johnston might be going back to Cavan is the Cavan Gaels, as opposed to the Cavan County team, is we want to just take a look back last year, because it was always coming down the tracks. Now, I just hear this evening that he's made himself unavailable for St. Kevin, so I don't know what that means. Or you might be able to inform me more on that. But as far as I know, he was injured for their first championship match, which was unfortunate, I suppose, because if he had played, he would have put the whole thing to bed. But he was injured, As far as I know, he didn't attend that St. Kevin's match back then, so maybe his heart wasn't really in St. Kevin's. I'd say he just wants to get back to the Gaels.
There seems to be a bit of a difference and a bit of a difference of opinion with certain people. Do you think him coming possibly back to Cavan Gaels means that he will return to the Cavan County setup? And what do you think it would take for him to return to the Cavan County setup? If Terry Hyland is wants him back, for instance.
There's no bad blood with Terry Hyland and Sean Johnston, I wouldn't imagine. Anthony Ford is a selector of the Cavan team who's a club mate of Sean Johnston's, with the Gaels there, not with St. Kevin's. So, I mean, if he was coming back and he shot the lights out with the Gaels and they were to win a championship or something, I'm sure there would be cause for him to be brought back. I'm sure he probably is entitled to a try as more than any other player. Like, it's probably water under the bridge now. And saying all of that, talking to Cavan supporters and speaking to people in pubs and things like that after the match on Sunday, like, very few Cavan supporters would be in favour of him. But supporters, as you know yourself, are a fickle bunch. Like, if he was to come back and come on and play well, I don't know, in this case, maybe not. I was going to say, if he came on and played well, they might forget about it. But really, what really sickened people was when he came on and kicked a free against Cavan in the qualifier. I think we were losing by 15 points at the time. He came on, he got a free. Johnny Guide approached him, and whatever was said, Johnny might have said to him, "Will I take the free?" It looked like that to some people anyway, but Johnny Johnston said no. He's delighted to take the free. He kicked a brilliant free with his left foot as well. It was a great free from a tight angle. But I personally thought that was Roman Cavan's nose there. Eamon Sweeney wrote a very interesting piece in Sunday Independent last week or the week before, and he had a similar point of view. He was critical of McGeaney, and he said, "Look, there's no point coming out." McGeaney has come out and says some of these pundits are cowards and stuff like that. But he didn't name any names himself, which is a little bit cowardly. But he also he said, "Look, you make your bed, you lie in." It's not too long ago where he was rubbing Cavan's nose. Cavan were at such a low level, and Cavan is a very proud county. That really did hurt Cavan's supporters. So, are those same set of people going to accept Johnston back into the fold? It remains to be seen. The only thing he can do for now is get back to Cavan Gaels and get back to them playing good football, because he's effectively missed the year of football now. So, and he's 29 at the end of this month. You know, he's not 21 or 22. So, there's no thing to hope he gets back playing well. And then the selectors will look at him, I'm sure.
Okay, great. Thanks very much for joining us on the GAA Scores podcast, Paul.
No problem at all. Thanks very much.
Thank you.
And with that, we draw the curtains on another GAA Scores podcast. Thanks to Paul Fitzpatrick, Emmett Ryan, Mick O'Connor, Daniel St. Ledger, and of course you, the listener. Remember also to check out Elevate Sports on Twitter for all your coaching needs, and also GAA Scores for all the latest news and views in the GAA world. Thanks, and remember to tune in next week.